Seder Chayisora. And the Pasuk Vayovo Avram Lispod Lisorov Livkosa. And then in the end, the Ekbaro Nesi Milfonai, the Sheultis, in the beginning of Seder Chayisora, says the following. Man de shachiv le shichva, a person who, lo aleinu, someone dies, the family, mechayiv le mitkayo, ule mispidei, ule mikpare. He has three things that he has to do. He has to cry for that person, that includes all of the laws of Avelis, and to say a hesped, a eulogy, and to bury the person. Those are three responsibilities. The hachi ashkechan b'avram avuma. We find that Avram Avinu did all three things. Tesori Neinu, he came to eulogize her, cry for her, and bury her. So I want to speak about these, plus one other thing at the end of the Sedra, which is Nichum Adela. The end of the Sedra, after Avram Avinu dies, the Torah says, Vayovo, Vayihi Acharei Mos Avram, Vayivorech Elokim Es Yitzchok Beno. And Chazal say that bracha was Birchas Adela. He came to Menachem Avin. So in addition to crying, eulogizing, or whatever, there is a mitzvah also to comfort mourners. Hold on, no questions, I didn't say anything yet. Okay, so now let's take care of these things one at a time and explain them and see the interrelationship between them. Now normally the Hemek Shaila, the Netziv, points out that normally you first cry and then you eulogize. And he explains that the crying is a personal thing. A person cries for himself privately. And then publicly you have to eulogize the nifteris. So after a person, Rahman al-Tzlan, dies, so you first cry, that's a personal thing, and then you meet the tzibur and say eulogies. By Avram Avinu, it wasn't like that. By Avram Avinu, he wasn't there to begin with. So he came from Beersheba, and by the time he came, the crowds already had gathered to pay their respects to Sarah Imenu. So he couldn't cry himself first. He had to deal with the crowds and say eulogies. Then afterwards, he had time to cry privately. Now, you have to say what he means is that they didn't tell Avram Avinu that Sarah Imenu had died. They sent him a message in Beersheba, as is the custom. You don't send somebody a telegram, come fast because so-and-so was nifted. You say, things are bad, they're very sick, time to come. And therefore Avram Avinu didn't cry on the road from Beersheba to Hebron, because he didn't know what was wrong. He thought Sarah Imenu was sick or something, and they called him to come. Only when he got there did he discover that she had died, and there was all these throngs of people there. So he had to get involved in the Hesped first, and then the Bechi. I want to say a little bit different idea of this order and why by Avram was different. And I think that's not only my idea. I think that I've heard it other places, other people say it. And that's the following. Usually, we'll see that the concept of crying is to recognize that something is missing. And after you cry, and you get that feeling that because this person is no longer here, there's something missing, then you begin to think about what's missing, and you're able to eulogize the person. But you need the crying to arouse the intellectual understanding of what's missing and what to say is a eulogy. By Sarah Imenu, it was so obvious what the loss was that you didn't need to cry first to arouse yourself to feel and understand the loss. It was blatant. It was obvious. And therefore, only after the Hesped was Avram and Nisora to cry even more. Right? What was obvious and blatant was the original feeling. After the Hesped, it led to even more crying because he understood even more what he was missing after he had a chance to think about it. But the initial shock wasn't just to cry. The initial shock was to really realize that something was missing. Okay, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Hei, Kol HaMorid Mol Saladim Kosher, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sofra Numona Numichem Beis Genozov. Anybody who sheds tears for a kosher Jew, not a Talmud Chacham, not a Gadol B'Yisrael, a kosher Jew, that includes a man, a woman, right, who were kosher Yidden, they live their life the way a Jew is supposed to live. Someone who sheds tears for them, the Rabbanu Shel Olam counts every tear and puts it in his treasure house. And says on the other side, somebody who doesn't cry for an Adam Kosher. So it says that one of the possible results will be that his children will die, and then he'll have to cry for them. And obviously, if they die when they're young, that's what it says. The children will die when they're young. They are b'nei ganim k'sherim. They're all kosher. Children are all kosher. So he'll end up crying for an adam kosher because he didn't cry for a different adam kosher. Now that doesn't mean that because the father did something wrong, the children are going to die. We know that lo yumsu avos al banim, v'lo banim al avosam. People don't die or get punished for other people's sins. What it means is that if there's a reason why the Rabbanu Shel Olam would want these children to die early, right, whatever it may be, sometimes the father's merit or the mother's merit can save the children because the father doesn't deserve to have this tzar. Even though the child needs to die early for whatever reason, the neshama has to be taken from this world, but the Rabbanu Shel Olam will see to it that some other way will happen that the father shouldn't suffer for no purpose. But if the father didn't cry for other people, then he deserves to cry. So then, if there's a reason why the Rabbanu Shel Olam wants to take these neshamas, the father's merit won't stand in the way, because he doesn't have that merit. Okay. Now, the idea, I think, is the following. Every person has their portion in this world, what they accomplish, what they leave their mark on the world. I once wanted to say that's why, after a person's niftar, we put up a tombstone, a stone, and we engrave in the stone the person's name. The person's name represents his abilities, capabilities, talents, the mark that he made on the world. And when a person leaves this world, but he leaves that behind, and it's engraved in stone, which is eternal. The mark that a person made in this world, not only what's going to happen in the next world, but every person leaves their mark, some more, some less, in this world. And that is represented by engraving their name in stone. And in fact, the minig is when you go to a Beis HaKvaris, you leave a stone on the tombstone. Now the simple reasoning of that is kavod for the nifter. This way people see stones on the kever, they know that what's it called on the matseva, the people were there. It shows that people have visited the kever. But I was thinking of a different reason. Well, every time you visit, you're supposed to take away a little bit of the memory of that person and be inspired by what he represented or she represented and apply it to your life and make your life a little bit better. So it's as if you're adding to that matseva. You're adding another stone. You're adding a little bit more to that memory. That could be another reason why you do that. In any case, so in order to recognize that everybody has what they contribute to this world, and they have their yichud, their specialness, their unique characteristics that add to the world. The Rabbanu Shel Olam created a world, and everybody is important in being a part in the a piece of the puzzle that makes it complete. And if anybody's missing their specific part in their specific place and their specific generation, then the totality and the perfection of the world is missing. So when a person leaves this world, so he leaves a void. He leaves a vacuum. Something is missing. And it's important to recognize that. The way that we express feelings of loss, right? Of feeling, what's a good word? Feeling bereaved. Something's missing from me is crying. That's what crying is. Crying is an expression, I'm missing something, right? Something is wrong. And if you don't cry, that means that you don't recognize that something's wrong, that somebody's missing. A person died, that's it, okay, so what? Crying represents the fact that something is missing. And if you understand that, right, a person then is misorder himself to recognize how important it is that he makes his mark in the world. And he brings out his talents, abilities, and capabilities. And that life is short, and he's not going to be here forever. And whatever you leave behind you, right, depends on how much you accomplish or whatever. And All of these thoughts go through a person's mind when he comes face to face with the death of a relative or an adam kosher, and that brings him to cry. And the crying has a positive effect too in how he applies it to his life, as well as a covet for the person who was nifter, a recognition that something's missing. And the Radvaz says that that's the ikar tachlis of avelus, the main thrust of mourning is shahachai yitin alibo, that a person should take it to heart and realize that life is not eternal in this world, and what you accomplish in this world is what you take with you to the next world, and what you leave in this world, right, is extremely important. And therefore, a person who doesn't cry for an adam kosher doesn't recognize that, what's it called, that every person makes his mark and that something's missing when somebody leaves this world. So if you don't recognize that people make their mark, and when they leave, there's something missing, then you surely won't recognize any of the additions that a person makes in this world. You don't recognize what a person accomplishes in this world. Therefore, mida keneged mida, what is the greatest addition to a person in this world? His children. That's why it says, bechu, bechu, who do you really cry for? Someone who leaves this world without children. And without children doesn't necessarily mean he didn't have biological children. Because a person had hashpah, talmidim, people that he taught, that were inspired by him, those are considered his children. Sometimes a person has 20 children, and he leaves the world without any children because none of them have any connection. He had no hashpah on them, no didn't inspire them at all. So the person who made no mark and left nothing to continue his way here, that's the person to cry for, because that's a person who's really missing. So a person who doesn't recognize that someone is missing, that there's something missing by every person who leaves this world, so mida keneged mida, we take away any additions that he could give into the world and leave after him, because he doesn't recognize it anyway. So that's why part of the punishment is that his little children also died. The Anaf Yosef in the Ein Yaakov brings down the Iye Hayam, one of the Mefarshim on the Agoda of Shas. It's a very beautiful word that fits exactly with what I'm telling you. It says, God counts every tear that a person sheds for an adam kosher. What's the counting here? So he says what it means is the following. Every person recognizes a different aspect of the adam kosher who is gone, right? People added to the welfare of the world, right? They gave tzedakah. They were balei chesed. So some people recognize that aspect of the person. That's the relationship they had with him. So when he's gone, they feel that chesed is missing, tzedakah is missing, the welfare, physical welfare of people is missing. Other people, right, had a relationship with this person. May they learn with him. So they recognize that some wisdom is missing from the world, Torah wisdom. Other people related to his mitzvahs that he did, and that's what inspired them. For them, the mitzvahs are missing. Every person has a different aspect of why he's crying. So every tear is different. So the Rebbe Moshe counts each tear and differentiates, what are you crying for? What do you recognize that's missing? What's the difference? Because it says that whoever cries for Yerushalayim, whoever mourns for Yerushalayim, zoche v'roa v'simchasa, special midah keneged midah, that if you mourn for something, then what you mourn for, you'll be zoche to have. So it works here also, he says, yeah. The person who cries for the tzedakah of a person who leaves this world, that's what's missing for him, he'll be zoche to see more tzedakah in the world. Person who cries for the chachma will be zoche to more chachma. Somebody who cries for all the aspects will be zoche to all the aspects. What does it mean? I mean, zoche, it's not some kind of magical thing, because I'm crying for this one. But the idea, I think, is, when I like to explain what it means, called a mesav yishlayim, zoche v'ro v'simchas. It doesn't say yizke, the future. It's not just a reward that in the future you will see the simcha of Yerushalayim. But it's immediate now. Roa means you understand. If you know how to mourn for what's missing, then you understand what was. Because if you didn't understand what was and what will be, then you can't really feel anything's missing. So you're zoche the roe the simchasa. You immediately are zoche to really appreciate what the simcha is and was and will be. So therefore, same thing over here. If you feel the tzedakah missing, the chachma missing, the mitzvah's missing, right, then you are zocheh to appreciate that. And if you appreciate it, it's a schus that you will recognize when that thing will be replaced in different ways. If you don't appreciate what it is, you'll never recognize when it comes back. But if you appreciate it, you'll feel it. So you'll feel when it's brought back into the world. And this feeling of someone being missed and what they represented and what they added to the world, right, is missing, the Maharsha says, is in itself Yiras Shamayim. That's Yiras Shamayim. Recognizing the benefits in this world, what's good in the world, and when somebody leaves the world, what he takes with him, and what you have to then try to make up the loss, all of those things are part of what a Yiras Shamayim is. That's taking the world seriously, and taking yourself seriously, and taking other people seriously. And therefore, it's not a question. It says that God counts these tears and puts them in his treasure house. But there's another Gemara that says, Ein lakadosh baruch hu, b'otsaro, right, the beis genazov ela otsa shel Yiras Shamayim levad. The Rebbeinu Shlomo, his treasure house has only one thing, Yiras Shamayim. So here it says he has tears of people who will cry for people who are kosher. So the Maharsha says the same thing. That's Yiras Shamayim. That kind of crying is a crying that recognizes the loss, recognizes the need to make it up, and recognizes what's important in this world and what's not important. The tears themselves, I want to say symbolically, what do tears represent? First of all, tears are like a fountain. We find that analogy many times in Eicha. My eyes should be like a fountain of crying. A fountain represents something that doesn't stop, that's Mayan Hanoveya. It flows constantly, which means that when I cry, I'm crying for a loss, but I'm recognizing the fact that that loss doesn't have to be final, because there's always a continuation in this world. One generation comes, one generation goes, the next generation comes. People can continue on what other people were not able to do anymore because they're no longer here. So it's like a Mayan Hanoveya. So the tears represent this idea of continuity. That's one thing. Second thing is, the tears are salty. Salt represents preservation. Salt preserves things. So the tears represent that it's not that I'm crying over something that's lost and finished, but whatever person's mark he made in the world, I'm sorry that he can't do more. I'm sorry that he's no longer here to produce. But what he produced is eternal. So the tears, right, that are crying represent continuation and represent preservation. In addition, tears blind your eyes. You get blinded from the salty tears. I once wanted to say a pshat. I thought the Sfarno said it. I said it at the Sheva Brachos recently, and I looked for the Sfarno, I couldn't find it. And I looked up in my notes, I had said it about 30 years ago, to see who I quoted it from, and there was no source. So I may have said it myself. In any case, it's a good word. It says that when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they had to make a smoke screen. So I want to say that when a person's physical, faculties, his physical senses are dulled, then his spiritual senses become stronger. We find that by people with handicaps. People who are blind hear better, right? They sense better, they can touch better, the Rebbeinu Shlom compensates one thing for another. So when a person's physical sense, he can't see that well, or he can't hear that well, then adarabah, his inner senses become strong. The Rebbeinu Shlom didn't want the Kohen Gadol to look around the Kodesh HaKadoshim because there's nothing there to see physically. He wanted him to prophetically be inspired what was there. So he made him have a smoke screen, so his physical vision was impaired, so his spiritual vision became stronger. Same thing over here. When you cry, if you look at things physically, you give up hope and you're sad and bitter, person died. But if you look at in the spiritual, with a spiritual view, you realize that there's a spiritual world, this isn't the only world, right? And everything has continuity, and you look at it in a more positive way. So the tears blind your physical vision, so you get a more inner vision. And therefore, I always like to say that Bechi, first of all, has the same gematria as Lev, because crying comes from the heart, and it also comes from the word Becha, something from within you. That's the power of crying. And there's a riff, the Rav Yosef Pinto on the Ayin Yaakov, not the other, the Rish on the riff, it's a Perush. He says that the tears that a person cries for an oven kosher, they are the tal oros talecha. That is the tal which HaKadosh Baruch Hu will use to resurrect the dead. And the idea being that the whole idea of the resurrection of the dead, matzmiach Yeshua, the Rabbanu Shel Olam called, from this, what a person does in this world, he, what's it called, creates the next world. They're not two separate worlds. This is where you plant the seed and there you reap the fruit. So if that's the case, recognizing, right, what's missing and trying to supplement it and complement it and fill the void and realizing that your life has to be used because this person made a mark and he's no longer able to do it and I have to supplement and I have to realize that my life is also not endless and therefore I have to accomplish what I can when I can, all of that is the do that will eventually lead to Tchias HaMeisim of that person and other people. And also, one of the Mefarshim says an interesting idea, I don't remember who, that it also adds not only to the spiritual strengthening of this world by crying for another kosher, but the physical strengthening. Because when people see that other people are dear to you and you cry for them, then they feel that they're also dear to you, that you value people. So other relatives, when they see you crying for a relative who died, realize that even though you may not express it, but you really feel a preciousness to your relatives. All right, you're crying over one of them. And the same thing goes in the general population. When you cry for an Adam Kosher, that means that people say, well, you see, this person values human beings. He values other people. And they feel Kemayim Panim Al Panim. They feel that you feel them precious, they feel you precious, and there's an Achdus and a Chevreshaft, right, a camaraderie that is enhanced. Okay, that is Bechi. That's crying. Now let's get to the next. Yeah. Next, Hesped. The idea of a Hesped. So the Hesped is a eulogy, and the Gemara has two possibilities of a Hesped being Yakra de Shachvi. It is the honor of the dead, right? It's an honor for the deceased to say a eulogy. In fact, it says the neshama is there, hearing the praises that one says about it. And it's also to be yakra dechayi. It's an honor to the living that they should hear the praises of the person deceased. And it's an honor, first of all, that they have that person in their family, and secondly, Yakra dechayi, I always like to say, also means the importance of life. Yakar, yakir means something that's valuable, the value of life. When you hear the praise of a person, you realize this is what a person was put in this world to do. Not to do nothing, not to do negative things, do positive things. And that's the praises that you say about a person. And therefore, it gives the living the understanding that we have to emulate that. If we want people to say about that, about us, we have to do something, right? So it has both aspects, even though the main thing is Yakra Deshachvi, the main thing is the honor of the deceased. Now, and the Neshama is there and hears it. What's the purpose? Because the Neshama also has to realize it's going on now to a new world. But it should realize that whatever it's going to get in that world comes from what he did in this world. There's not two separate things. He's not getting it as a present. The main idea of this world was that you should earn your reward. So it's important for the neshama to know he's not getting any presents in the world to come. He's getting what he put in this world, and it's earned. So as he makes the transition, we remind him what he did in this world. Therefore, it's crucial that you don't say anything that's not true for a few reasons. One is because the neshama is now in a world of truth. And in a world of truth, when you hear lies, it's like rubbing your nails on a chalkboard. Right? It really hurts the neshama to hear lies. Secondly, it hurts the neshama even doubly, because the neshama says they can't find anything true to say about me. Only lies? That means that there's nothing true? So that's a terrible tsar for the neshama. it says you can exaggerate. If the person gave tzedakah, you can say he was a big baal tzedakah, because you don't know. Maybe behind the scenes he gave more tzedakah than you know of. But if the guy never put his hand in his pocket, never gave a red cent to anybody, you can't say he was a baal tzedakah. He's probably something else. So as a rabbi, I have an interesting story, I don't have time. What's it called? In Chutz La'aretz, much more than here, I usually had to, was called to make funerals for people that I never knew. Because families would call the funeral chaplain and say, we need a rabbi. Right? So, and sometimes they say, we want a conservative, reformed, we want an Orthodox rabbi. We don't pretty much have anything to do with this, but if we're doing it already, we want the, top of the line, right, Orthodox rabbi. So the funeral chapel would call me, do you want to do this funeral? Here's the number of the people. So I had to say a hesped. But it's very hard to get to know people at that point. So to know what to say. So what I used to do was call the family. If the funeral was the next day, I'd call them in the evening. And I would say to them, tell me something nice about the deceased, because I have to say a eulogy and it has to be true things. And I then would put it into a eulogy, fill in the blanks or whatever. Then, or I would meet with the family before the funeral and ask them then. Okay. And I still have time to put it together, into a eulogy. So usually when people, if we're not from, right, what are they going to tell me? Right? They didn't say bad words about people. Very nice. That's a very nice mila. They had a good sense of humor, which is also mila. There's a Gemara in Tainus that says that two batchonim, two jokers, who had a chelik in Olam Haba because they cheered people up. It's also a big mila. So he's found something. What they told me, he had a good golf game. It was a little hard to find what the mila was. But he's a good sportsman. He was athletic. Whatever it be, right? One time, what's it called? I had the following maisa. I met with a family. There was a wife, a sister, and a few children. And we're sitting in the funeral home, not frum. And I said, I have to make the eulogy. Could you tell me something about your brother, your husband, that I could include in the eulogy? And there's silence for 5 minutes. Everybody's just sitting there looking at each other. Finally, they all look at the wife, and she stands up. He says, Rabbi, there is absolutely nothing good to say about my husband. And they all nodding their head. The children, the sister, everybody nodded their head. I thought to myself, probably the only thing I can say is that he's lucky he's dead. With a family like this, right? But I don't remember. Every time I tell this over, I say the same thing. I don't remember what I said. I have it written down in one of the books. I don't remember what it was. I have to go through 10 years of notebooks to find what it was. But I do remember that day I went home, bought candies and little toys for all my children and told them, remember this. So just in case, there was something at least, in any case. So that is the hesped. And by saying the hesped, you give the neshama the feeling that they accomplished in this world and they are now receiving the reward of what they accomplished. They will receive the reward. That's their next slab in their existence. And for the living, they should hear the positive things and take it to heart and realize that these are things that people should be involved in. And it's interesting, therefore, that one of the purposes of the hesped is laharbos bechi, to make people cry. It should be said in a way, in a mournful tune. There's a tune to say a hesped that the many Bali Musar use or whatever Litvish use, right? It makes people cry, right? It's when you're not allowed to give a hesped. So some people hold that it's only this kind of hesped you can't give, the kind that makes people cry, but the kind that just relates the milas, the good points of the nifter, that you could say even at a time when you can't say a hesped. In any case, but this is the idea. The whole idea of crying, we said, is to recognize that something's missing. So the hesped, which tells you what's missing, has to go hand in hand with the crying. Yeah. Huh?
What is the hesped?
Hesped. And Osios have very nice. Hesped. Hesped means what's missing, and hesped is the same letters. Okay, let's go on. Chazal say that whoever does not say a hesped is misatzel, he becomes lazy, derelict about saying a hesped. For a chacham, he's fit to be buried alive. So the Marsha says a cute idea. He says, because a person doesn't say hesped, doesn't recognize the fact that when somebody dies, things have changed. And he's no longer doing what he contributed to this world, right? And in his death, something's missing in this world. Because you don't recount, right? It's as if he's guy's still living. If he's living, what you bury him for? So you buried this chacham alive. Therefore you deserve to be buried alive yourself. That's what the Marsha says. But it's even more than that. A person doesn't know the difference between life and death. To him, there's no difference if a person's alive, a person's dead, makes no difference. But there is a difference. A person is supposed to be dynamic in this world. And if he's no longer here, so he goes on to another existence, but in this existence, he's not contributing anything anymore. So there's a very big difference. Okay. And activate task. I mean, the hesped is not just to say it for people who, you know, died young or whatever. It says that the mabul was delayed 7 days in order that they could be osik in the hesped of Mesushelah. Now, Mesushelah lived 969 years. He was the oldest person ever to live. Okay? He made the Guinness Book of World Records for longest life. 969. And you would think, I mean, what could they say about the hesped? I mean, the guy, you know, it wasn't, you know, Admei Aviesrim eight times. It was, he lived a nice full life. Yet for him to say the hesped of what he accomplished in his life could have maybe made the difference to the people of the Mabul, that they take it to heart and realize that they have to change their ways. So even a hesped on Mesushelach, Adarabba, he must have accomplished tremendous things in those 969 years. It must have been a long hesped. So that's why it took 7 days. But maybe the people would realize when they hear what Mesushelach accomplished that maybe they have to change their ways. So God was giving a chance another 7 days that maybe the hesped would have its proper and desired result. Next to finally, is the kvura, burial. Burial has to be in the ground, okay? Today there is these mausoleums where they bury people above the ground, what's it called, in buildings, okay? All of that is a denial of death. Because once you put somebody in the ground and put earth over them, you know they're no longer here, right? Once you put them in a building and keep sliding them out, you can think that maybe, you know, they're really not dead. They're just, you know, resting and, enjoying the view. They put a television in there or whatever also, so that's something to do. And people in this world deny death because they don't understand that this world is a temporary place and it's meant to be a preparation for eternity. They don't believe in eternity. All they believe is in the here and the now. So deep down, they don't want to know about death. They don't want to know about age either. People hide old age. They dye their hair. In Miami, we used to have a lot of senior citizens, especially women, who used to dress like teenagers, teeny boppers. They dye their hair blue, green, yellow. I mean, the most atrocious kind of. It wasn't so sad, it was funny. But this is the way people. Try to deny age because they don't want to see their aging. I mean, I once heard from a friend of mine, he went to a Goyisha funeral. Well, at least it was a Goyisha funeral. And there they have, like, you know, viewings. Even unfortunately, by non-Frumyin, they have viewings. What do? They make the person up that he looks like he's alive. So nobody should ever think, Chasasom, he's dead, because nobody wants to know anything about death. I remember when I was 8 years old, I was at a Levaya. And there was a viewing. And I was curious. So I also walked by to see. I never saw a dead body, you know, something to see. There was two women in front of me. And one turned to the other one and said, he looks better than he ever looked when he was alive. Made an indelible impression on me. But this one, this is worse. This was a Goyisha funeral. So they were walking around for the viewing. And the guy told me he had to run out because he was biting his tongue that he shouldn't laugh. They had the guy sitting up in the casket with a tennis racket in his hand. the total denial of anything. I'm sure his game was not that great at that point, but they surely didn't ask him to serve. But in any case, but that was it. That's a total denial. Even most funerals today, not frum, they leave the casket on this grass that looks like, you know, astroturf, and then everybody goes home. And the Schwarzes bury the person because nobody wants to see that casket go into the ground because that's too final. And people don't take their children to cemeteries. They don't want them to know anything. That's not the way the world was. The world used to be the children, grandchildren used to be around the bed of a grandfather that was dying, and people knew this was part of life. That's the way people died, in a way that they understood that this world is one world, there's an eternal world, and a person is born into this world, he's born into the next world too. In fact, the Sefer Hasidim says that that's why we wash a person who dies, the Tahara. We wash him. Because just like when a person came into this world, the first thing you do is wash off the baby. When a person leaves this world, you wash him also. It's to see that he's being born into another world. And so, and that's why we bury people in the ground. Because it's like planting a seed. What a person did in this world creates the fruit of the next world. And there'll be a transformation. And that body that's planted in the ground will once again sprout. And that's why it says that the neshama doesn't go really into the spiritual world till the body decays. Because as long as the body is here, the neshama belongs here. Once the body's not necessary anymore, the neshama goes on. And one day the body will resprout too. That's why the minig is when you leave a cemetery, you rip up some grass and you throw it over your shoulder, throw it behind you, and you say two things. Zohar ki ofra nachnu, and vayatsitsu vayifrichu me'ir ke'esav asoda. When Tchisavesim comes, the people will sprout on the ground, like the grass. So we believe that, we are offer. We're not eternal physically in this world. But what we do in this world has eternal repercussions for our soul, and also eventually for our body. It will regenerate and grow based on what kind of seed you put into the ground. And the seed you prepare all the 120 years that you're here. Okay, the last thing is Nichum Aveil. Okay, which would seem to be a little bit, if we want people to cry and eulogize or whatever, what are we comforting them for? But it's not. That's exactly the point. The idea is that even though there's an idea to cry and to eulogize and to bury, but it has to be directed in a positive way. The crying is not bitter, miyuash, giving up hope, right? Resigning yourself to the fate of a terrible thing or whatever, resigning yourself from life. It's the opposite. Like we explained, the crying, the hesped, is all a positive thing of how to look at death in a positive way and learn the lesson and see what that person accomplished and what you can accomplish and how life is precious and life is not in this world without an end. And therefore, you need nichum. The purpose of nichum aveilim is not to come and make the person forget that he's an other. You know, Tom Zelm jokes. It's to comfort him and let him see that what happened is God's will. This is part of the world. That's why you say hamakom yenachem eschem, because God is called makom, because he's mekomo shel olam. He directs everything in the world. He's not in the world, and the world is happening around him. He is the source of everything in the world. So if something happens, it's because God wants it to happen. And therefore you have to makabel the tzara b'simcha, because there's a purpose for it. And you have to then fit into that purpose. And that's why we say b'so shara ve'le tzion v'irushalayim. Because it's obvious that the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the whole galus and everything, there's a process. There's a purpose for it. There's a good end that will come. We believe Mashiach's going to come. So you're part of that process too. Every individual is part of that process. So look at it as part of a process that eventually will have a good ending to it. Okay. And that's why we have a Sudas Havroah, the Or Sameach says. What do we do? The first meal that an Avo has after the funeral, he can't eat from his own food. He has to be given food from somebody else. So the Or Sameach says why? He says because people in their mourning start to think, what was the purpose of all of this? My relative's neshama was in Gan Eden before he was born. Then he came into this world, had to go through all the sorrows of this life, and he went back to Gan Eden. Why didn't God just leave him in Gan Eden? Why did he have to come into this world? So the rabbis tell us why. Because God could have given a person his world to come for free on a silver platter, but you wouldn't appreciate it. You appreciate what you earn. So the Rabbanu Shalom gave us a chance to come to this world and earn that world to come. So it was worth coming into this world to earn it. So that's called Nahama D'Sufa, bread that a person is embarrassed to eat because it's given to him for free. And he didn't earn it. So we give the Avil, that first meal, bread that he didn't earn, that he's embarrassed to eat because he got it from somebody else, and then he realizes that maybe the Neshama was better to come into this world so it wouldn't have to have an Olam Haba, bread that he didn't earn, that he was embarrassed to eat. Okay. The Medrash says that. The Medrash says, what was this Nichum Avelim that God gave to Yitzchak? After Avram died, Yitzchak said, Ein bi ma'asim tova, I'm not like my father, right? And he felt inadequate. And God had to come and tell him, no, that's not what you're supposed to feel. You lost your father, and now that's it, the world's over, there's nothing more you can do, and you resign yourself to inactivity because you feel inadequate. No. Now you carry on what your father did. You be the Yitzchak, the next generation on. So the Nichum Avelim was to give perspective on the, what's it called, that you don't feel giving up hope, and you don't feel bitter, and you don't mourn excessively. The Nichum Avelim is there to, what's it called, not only for the Avel, it says for the Neshama too. That's why you always say, Hamokim Minachem Eschem, because you're including the Neshama. The Neshama is also being told that, you know, what's it called, that the fact you left this world, now you're on in the next world, it takes time to get used to that, to direct the person in the next world, and to direct the people in this world as to how they should mourn and what they should get out of the mourning properly. So it's all part of the same system. And that's why it could be, you don't say anything to the Avil till he speaks first. Because until he's ready to relate, telling him anything's not going to help. He has to understand that there's a interrelationship. There's a give and take over here that he's part of. You're not just soothing him, but you're giving him direction, so he can then take it and use it properly. So until he opens up and speaks, there's no tachlis to be menachem. And that's why also it says, Bekoshi tiru nichum aveilim b'shabbos. If nichum aveilim is just joking with the guy, make him forget he's an avil, you can do it on Shabbos too. But it's not, it's putting the aveilis into perspective. And therefore you have to bring up the aveilis. So on Shabbos, that's not a priority, not a good thing. And also, what's it called? Shabbos, it says, Shabbos, when Shabbos is, the Avelis stops, but it comes back mostly Shabbos. Yontif comes and the Avelis is pushed away. Because Yontif, the Simcha of Yontif, pushes away Avel. It's the antithesis of Avel. But Shabbos is no Simcha per se, there's only Shabbos. Focus with the Simcha Shabbos. But it's not the same kind of Simcha as Yontif. So why does Shabbos stop the Avelis? Because Shabbos gives you a different perspective on the world. It gives you an eternal perspective. So you're looking at the Avel through different glasses, and it doesn't look that bad. But when Shabbos goes away, you put your other glasses on, and the Avel's still there. It didn't go away. It's just that you were able to see it differently on Shabbos. So in the Mela, the Koshi Tiru, the Avel is still there. Yeah, exactly. That's the perspective we're talking about. That's the main Olam Haba. The Iyun Yaakov says, going back, that a person who is not misavel on Ronan Kosher, so Mida Keneged Mida, he loses his children. Why? Because he loses his Menachemim. They're the ones who are going to comfort him when his parents die. So he loses Menachemim. It fits in with this idea. Because if you don't know how to mourn, then you don't need a Menachem. You don't need somebody to guide you and to comfort you, because the purpose of the guide and the comforter is to put the mourning into perspective. But if you don't know there's anything to mourn about, you don't need somebody to put it into perspective. There's nothing to put in perspective. The Mela, that's the Mida Keneged Mida. So I think we gave a interesting perspective on all of these things that are mentioned in Chayei Sara. And it's interesting that the Sedra that speaks about the death of Sara and Avram and Yishmael is called Chayei Sara, because death is a part of a process of eternal life. And that's what life is all about. Yeah. Kriya, yeah. I have a nice shot in Kriya. Kriya usually just is a way to get out the feeling of tsar, right? By ripping something. It's part of the idea of Avelis is to give you the chance to ventilate your tsar. That's the real meaning of Kriya. But I have a different idea. Right. Okay, in any case, so what I would say is that the When you tear the beged, you show that it's only the clothing that's been torn away. The body has been torn away. Right. But the neshama still exists. But what did the goyim do? They tore their bodies. To say is that the essence is gone. There's nothing left. Right? But we don't tear the body. We tear the clothing to show the neshama is still around. Just the goof is a clothing to the neshama. That's what's been torn away.